Gloria to CC Drew, Lord Gordon. Continue reading the Shema Bhagavatam. We're going to count to 5, which is entitled The Creative Impetus, text number, chapter number 10, Maharaj Prahugana, Nishtha Bharata, and we're on text number 6. And 6 is one of those prose verses that's difficult to chant, so I'll just go through the word meanings and then the translation and the purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Self-realized, standing on a Brahman platform.
Vishnim, being silent, should become the palanquin for Lot, as before, with Baha carrying. So King Rahugana is speaking to Jadbharata. How troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm, nor very stout and strong. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? In this way, the king criticized Jadbharata with sarcastic words. Yet despite being criticized in this way, Jadbharata had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with the lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, aham brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by the sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. 4.5. Jadbharata was completely liberated. He did not even care when the dacoits attempted to kill his body. He knew that he certainly was not the body. Even if the body were killed, he would not have cared, for he was thoroughly convinced of the proposition found in Bhagavad Gita 2.20, Ahanite Hanimane Sharire. He knew that he could not be killed even if his body were killed. Although he did not protest, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his agent could not tolerate the injustice of the dacoits. Therefore, he was saved by the mercy of Krishna, and the dacoits were killed. In this case, while carrying the palanquin, he also knew that he was not the body. His body was very strong and stout, in sound condition, and quite competent to carry the palanquin. Due to his being freed from the bodily conception, the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. The body is created according to one's karma, and material nature supplies the ingredients for the development of a certain type of body. The soul the body covers is different from the bodily construction. Therefore, anything favorable or mischievous done to the body does not affect the spirit's soul. The Vedic injunction is asango hyayam purusham. The spirit soul is always unaffected by material arrangements.
Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pachari Devi, Visesha Srinivani Pasatatari Shtari, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Bhagavani Dhyana, Shri Advaita Gadamaha, Shri Vasani, Gauravati Devi, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Tanchakalpa Tribhishcha, Kripa Sindhu Vivacha, Jitan Pavane Vyo, Vajra Vyo, Vyo, So here we're hearing about someone who's really convinced they're not the body. So we learn when we first encounter the devotional service of the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita, we learn in the second chapter that we're not the body, basically. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be as the soul passes through different changes of body, birth, growth, old age. Similarly, the soul's unaffected by death, and we're
we're told we should tolerate happiness, distress, heat and cold, like that. And Krishna goes on to say that one who's not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly fit for liberation. So we hear these things and we understand them intellectually, but to actually act on the platform where one's completely unaffected by anything that happens to the body is a whole different thing. And he'd actually attained the stage where nothing affecting his physical body had the least effect on him. So the question is, how did he attain such an amazing stage? And how can we attain such a stage of being completely convinced of our spiritual identity? Basically, he in his former life, he was the great king, Maharaj Bharata. And as he was a king, he performed sacrifice. And as he was a product of Vedic culture, he knew that sacrifice is meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, Krishna. So he was duly performing all these sacrifices to please Krishna, and he got such a taste from serving Krishna that he actually lost taste for everything else. He lost taste for the opulence of the kingly life, he lost taste for his family and his children, and he was just completely happy serving Krishna. And he renounced his whole kingdom and he went to the woods and he continued his devotional service. And it was just circumstantially that he developed this affection for this deer which distracted him, because his whole focus, he was so enthusiastic about the devotional service, he'd given up everything that was previously dear to him. So it was actually a great anomaly that he became attached to the deer. And because he was inattentive in that way, he had to be punished in the next life by taking birth as a deer. But because of his previous devotional service, he could remember his previous practice and his ambition to attain Krishna. So even as a deer, he was not enthusiastic to hang out with the other deers who were all in Maya. He decided he would go to the part of the forest where the sages were meditating, and he would perform austerities by eating dry leaves, and this way he would be involved in sense gratification, and he could just think of the personality of God.
He wouldn't eat berries.
What's that?
He wouldn't eat berries.
No, too often. So then in the next life he remembered the past two lives, because he was very fortunate. Actually, it's not often that people remember their previous lives. It happens from time to time. And there's one scientist named Ian Stevenson who studied 3,000 cases of people who remembered previous lives. So it does happen from time to time. But there's some special blessing if you can remember your previous life. So at any rate, he remembered how he became distracted as King Bharata by this deer, and how he had to accept this deer body. And basically, his program isn't described. His kind of devotional service isn't really described, other than he was just remembering the personality of God. And by this remembrance, he actually became so detached from everything material. So this remembrance is actually a key point, because it's actually possible to perform the rituals of devotional service with actually not absorbing one's mind in Krishna. And then if one does that, one certainly gets some benefit, because the activities of devotion are so glorious that there's some benefit. But unless one's mind is fully absorbed in Krishna, one won't become fully purified. So he was aware of this, and he thought about Krishna all the time. There's a nice verse in the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's a very special chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's called Attaining the Supreme. Basically, if you want to go back to Godhead, just read chapter 8. And the whole theme of chapter 8 basically is the goal is to remember Krishna at the time of death. In 8.5, Krishna says, if one remembers him at the time of death, he will attain him without fail. In 6, he says, whatever you remember at the time of death, that state you attain. And we learned that in this pastime, because Bharata, you remembered a deer, right? You got a deer body. So if you remember Krishna, you get a spiritual body. The body gets Satchit Ananda, that can engage in service to Krishna eternally in great happiness. So there's this nice verse in that chapter, Anyana Cheta, Ananyas Cheta Sadatana, Yomam Smarati Nitisaha, Tasya Ham Sulava Parta, Nitya Yuktasya Yogina. And then one interesting thing about that verse is the word always appears 3 times in the verse. Sadatana means always, Nitisaha means always, Nitya means always. And the verse says that for one who always remembers me, I am easy to obtain, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. So this remembrance of Krishna is not a small thing. You can attain Krishna just by remembering him. And another person who became completely detached from material existence by remembrance of Krishna is Prahlada Maharaj. There's a verse that describes how different great personalities attain the Lord by different methods, that Shukadeva Goswami attained Krishna by chanting the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Maharaj Pariksha attained perfection in Krishna consciousness by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prahlada Maharaj, he was famous for remembering. So he attained such an exalted state, even though his father, Hiranyakashipu, tried to kill him in so many ways. He didn't even pray to Krishna for protection. He was so... For one thing, he was so realized that he was not his body. He didn't have to worry about his body. And he was also so convinced that Krishna was right there and completely competent and willing to protect him, that he didn't have to worry. And he attained that state just by remembering. So this remembrance isn't a small thing. And it appears that this Jadvarta, that was his program. His program was to completely detach himself from situations that would distract him from his internal meditation on Krishna. And by that meditation, he became so detached, even though this king was saying these nasty things, he wasn't in the least affected. And generally, when people say nasty things to us, we're affected in some way. Sometimes we think of saying nasty things back to them, and sometimes we even do. We generally remember it. Sometimes people remember it for years. Yeah. Someone said something bad to me 20 years ago. You know, but this, it didn't even, it just went, just sort of like, just didn't affect him at all. It sort of like went in one ear and out the other without disturbing him. So how this bhakti yoga can bring one to such an exalted transcendental state is described in different parts of the Bhagavatam. One particular part of the Bhagavatam where it's described a lot is in the teachings of Lord Kapila. Lord Kapila was enlightening his mother in devotional service. His mother was very despondent that although she married a great sage, she felt she spent her whole life engaged in sense gratification with him rather than inquiring from him about the absolute truth. Basically, he said, don't worry, your son, Kapiladeva, is the incarnation of God, and he's perfectly competent to instruct you. And so at a certain point, she inquired from him about self-realization. He speaks many chapters where he gives clues about how we can become as realized as Jadvarta was. This is from the 25th chapter of the third canto. When one is completely cleansed of the impurities of lust and greed produced from the false identification of the body as I and material possessions as mine, one's mind becomes purified. In that pure state, he transcends the stage of so-called material happiness and distress. So basically there's the consciousness of the liberated soul and the consciousness of the conditioned soul are completely different. Conditioned soul thinks, I am this body, and everything in relationship with this body is mine. And happiness for me comes from bringing the sense objects in contact with the senses of my body. And that's real enjoyment in real life. Whereas the liberated soul thinks, I'm spirit. I'm part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, Krishna. And by engaging my senses in the service of Krishna, I really enjoy life. That's my pleasure. If I can see, if by my activities I can give pleasure to Krishna senses, that's my pleasure. So, when one engages in devotional service, this material conception is dissolved. That's developed in these verses here. So at that time, when one becomes purified from this false identification, he can see himself to be transcendental to material existence and all self-effulgent, never fragmented, although very minute in size. In that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation and devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material existence acts less powerfully on him. So the idea is that we really aren't our body. But when we engage in sense gratification, we are building up our identification with the body. And by engaging in devotional service, we're building up our identification with our real self as part and parcel of Krishna. We're admitting we're not our body, and we're just by engaging in devotional service, we're admitting different things. We're admitting that we're part and parcel of Krishna, we're admitting that Krishna's the goal, the object of sacrifice, and by acting positively in devotional service, our material attachments decrease. And that's actually the secret why bhakti is the supreme yoga, because there's a spiritual pleasure in performing devotional service for Krishna, and one feels satisfied by doing that. And then these demands of the senses, one realizes actually to be superfluous. They're not actually my desires, they're the desires that this body has become conditioned to in the course of my rotting from many births in the material world, and I actually owe them nothing. It's not by satisfying these mental concoctions, which are products of my past karma, that I'm going to be happy. But it's satisfying the Supreme Lord and its agents that's going to cause my happiness, because I'm part of the Supreme Lord.
Did you say I owe them nothing? Is that what you
said? Yeah, that our past conditioning is just, you know, we have according to our karma, we have certain aversions and certain attachments, but it's not like there's nothing sacred about them. You know? Due to my past pious activities, I have certain good karma coming. Due to my past sinful activities, I have certain bad karma coming. I have a certain psychophysical nature. I can engage it in devotional service, but actually has nothing to do with myself, actually. It's just we're very much habituated to it. We think in terms of our gender, our nationality, our race, and it's all completely superfluous. I was thinking we had at one point the Harinam was very slow in the beginning, you know. But I was noticing we had like people from quite a diverse group. We had one guy who was from Europe, and one guy who was from India. We had one guy who was black. We had one guy who was Indian. We had the rest who were white. We had we had one who was female, and the rest were male. So it was mixed genders, mixed race, mixed nationality, and we were having a great time chanting Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I was in Harinam, and
in England, and there was six or seven of us, and there was only one guy from England. There was me from the U.S., there was a girl from China, there was a girl from India, there was a guy from Ukraine, a guy from Hungary, and a girl from Finland, you know, and we're all together chanting. because we're actually spiritual beings, and we're engaged in a spiritual activity, and it's spiritual joy and a spiritual thing. And things that are external, they're minimized. There was one girl who was I met at a rainbow festival. This Balaram Chandra preached to her, and she ultimately became a disciple of Hridayananda Goswami. She was telling me when she became a devotee, she was you know, observing the devotees, checking them out, seeing what's going on here. She noticed that that the devotees had nothing materially in common. And she concluded, well, this must be a real spiritual movement then. You know? It's not for, you know, white Anglo-Saxon male or whatever, you know, this kind of group or that kind of group. It's completely diverse. Because it doesn't cater to the material body, it caters to the soul. And if people can just set aside for a moment their conception of their self, which is just produced of their past karma, which actually is external to themselves, and experiment with the chanting, they can feel the spiritual joy, because it's universal. But the trouble is that people see materially they don't see the chanting as for them. They see that as a certain group of people, or it may be all right for you, you know, or but due to their identification with their material situation, they're not even open enough to try it. So if we can somehow or other get people involved in at least trying it, then they can have a realization of the reality. And we all have some realization of the reality. We're not as detached as Jagvarta, but we are somewhat detached, because some of the things that people in this country are completely addicted to, we don't care about. We if McDonald's went out of business, it wouldn't affect us.
We'd be happy then.
Yeah, we'd be joyous. We'd have to buy someplace else to go to the bathroom.
Oh no.
At any rate. So the more we engage in the devotional service of the Lord, the more we see our material situation to be insignificant. Like one time, I can't remember if I mentioned it here, but one time I was traveling to a Hare Krishna program with three friends, and I was used to thinking of them as my friends, you know, we're devotees, we're going to this program together. So the other three were in their 20s, and I was in my 50s. You know? But I wasn't thinking in terms of, you know, our bodily situation, you know. So there was three guys and the girl was driving, and it was just started to rain, and the pavement was slippery. So she put on the brakes, but the car slid, and we slid into the person ahead of us, you know. So then, the police came, and they took out everyone's license, you know. And so they find these guys in their 20s, and there's me in their 50s, and they ask me, what are you doing to these people? And like, I never really was considered that, you know, and I'm completely different than these people. They're just my friends, we're going to the devotional program in this city, we're going to chant Hare Krishna and take the star. And then, first of all, I had to think of what he was thinking. Oh, he must be thinking I'm so much older than these. So then what can I say? So I said, well, I'm just here so that, just to make sure they don't get into trouble.
Oh, man.
So,
So we really are detached from different material conceptions. You know, by we actually see each other all as friends, even though we're from all kinds of different, you know, situations. There were people who were practically criminals who became devotees.
Yeah.
You know? And Prabhupada was able, just by presenting the pure knowledge of the soul, to connect with all kinds of people. And so therefore, there are a lot of people with all kinds of diverse places in this room. But it's to be expected because it's a spiritual room, which was, I thought was a cool observation. My friend Pali Krishna, you might know.
Yeah, like this one time, this group of Chinese devotees that came, like, you know, they barely spoke English, man. So I just went up to the guy and he had like a Krishna name, he had some Jai Kirtan or something like that. So I went up to him like, Prabhu, Kirtan, Ching Hare Krishna, I dance. And then he went and he led a Kirtan.
Wow.
And like within like 3-4 minutes that he led, like this whole group of people came, we're all dancing like crazy.
Yeah.
He didn't even speak English.
Connection with the popcorn and the soul.
Yeah.
And the more we get absorbed in the spiritual platform, the less the material platform bothers us. And when people insult us, you know, we don't feel we have to like lash back. But people say, one time I was chanting in Manchester, and somebody said this amazing thing to me. They said, what happened in your life to bring you to the level of doing this? Which is like an incredible thing to say.
Yeah.
And it made me really angry. And I just like said something off the top of my head. I said, I just wanted to find something that was better than everybody else was doing.
Oh my God. Sure.
And then he was walking away and he turned around. And he said something amazing, like something like that was the perfect thing to say.
Mm.
You know, so he accepted it actually, and,
wow.
And it was very striking, the whole thing.
Those examples you just gave were very similar to what happened with Jadavar.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that interacting with somebody different. Questions.
Yeah, really.
Questions. So funny. But the thing is, we have two faces with it. He went through this, all this sudden, all this preparation, all this, you know, attachment, you know, activity. But then, it was prepared when that situation came that some misdirected person said something to him. Then Krishna spoke through him and he was able to say something. It's incredible, the whole forest of material enjoyment, but we're going to start to read that where he starts to describe that. So we're in the same situation. Sometimes, you know, people garlands cleaning the floor, you know, and you're just thinking, you know, well, this is, sometimes the mind is like, I'm not doing this, you know, okay, this is an offering to Krishna. But really, Krishna's working on us in the course of our devotion service and preparing us for those situations to be ready. Because, you know, people will pop up and Krishna will say, you know, he hit you with these personalities that, you know, and if we say something, I remember sometimes the devotee say something ridiculous, you know. There's a devotee, David, and I, when we're traveling on Sankirtan, you know, that's classic, you know, we're in a van sleeping somewhere, or the police come in the middle of the night, all the time, the police are sitting here and there, and you know, I remember he used to say some ridiculous things, maybe this is, but this is like what to not to do, you know? What's in the van? Oh, you know, pornography, drugs.
Oh, my God.
Things like Gatavan, you know, and you know, ready to say something sarcastic and ridiculous, you know? You know, what's his name? Bhagavad Gita used to say stuff like, you know, which was like actually so true and refreshing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're spreading love of God all over the world. You know, you know, just something like basic and simple and direct like that is like so radical and, you know, appropriate to say, you know, but we don't want to just act out of the false ego and say something, you know, what are you bothering me, you dumbbell? You know, I mean, you know, people do say, they ask ridiculous questions and how to give a really good answer that will be uplifting. What does it say, you who speak next to David? Austerities of speech, speak what's true in meditation.
Right.
You know, to be ready. To have that attitude of like, you know, okay, this is Krishna prepared me for this moment. In the Bible, there's a thing that says something about, I will bring me before princes and kings. You know, I found myself speaking to doctors, lawyers, United Nations officials, you know. Here's Jada Barton, he's just like, looks like some slob, you know, some guy with, you know, derelict, you know, discombobulated, you know, fallen personality. And then all of a sudden, there's something like a question comes, and all this amazing, beautiful wisdom comes. So we're in the process of that. We should be confident that Krishna is preparing us by our austerities and service to speak principles of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Sometimes, like, you know, on Sankirtan, the way I look at this, like, Lord Balaram's plow, you know, he's want to plow out the earth, like that. Mm. And like, it was on the second day of the Christmas marathon of this month, and like, this one guy, he just said something really nasty to me in time, so he was like, something really nasty. And then I just thought, I was about to like say something really nasty back. I was like, you're just a part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna loves you, and I love you, and I'm on the mental platform, I'm going to snap out of it right now. And he snapped out of it, and he kept going. But, yeah.
Last night I was out here at some flower donations. I opened the door of the vehicle, and there was a car. It looked like a guy who went from Arabian descent. You know, he was like, you know, I said, God bless you. You know, he was like, I wish you well. Please excuse me. God bless you. You know? And he just came out of that. You know, it was like one of those things. We have to have it like on the tips of our tongue, and be ready. You know, when that thing comes, to just give them something Krishna conscious. You know.